Okay, let's start with the next session. Carrie Hall is going to talk about language loss and well-being among the Chorti Maya.
Okay, great, thank you.
First, let me introduce the Chorti Maya. They live in southern Guatemala primarily in the municipality of Chiquimula and the roundabouts. In terms of the Chorti Mayan language, it descends from Proto-Mayan through the Cholan branch. It's one of the eastern Cholan languages, only one that is still extant today since Cholti has disappeared in the late 17th century. In terms of speakers, the number of speakers has always been quite an issue. A lot of reports and census and so forth data is quite wrong in terms of how many speakers are. They generally tend to focus on the number of quote-unquote indigenous, which they associate with language speakers, which is rarely the case these days. So some of the most prominent numbers are the 84 and 93 census data. There are 52,000. That's most certainly not the case. Some of the most recent work by myself and Schumann and Metz puts it at about 10 to 12,000 native speakers today, and the numbers are certainly decreasing rather than increasing, despite some pretty significant efforts in terms of pedagogy and second language teaching that have come about in the last 10 or 15 years. Maybe that's going to have a bigger impact, but it has to stem the tide of language disuse among the people, which is a strong current at the moment. Ethnically, the Chorti, even in some of the most pronounced towns in terms of traditionally where Chorti capitals and so forth have been concentrated, even today, areas like Hokotan and Kamotan, you can see, are indigenous in terms of blood, but the number of speakers in these areas is incredibly low and has been for really the last century, but it's certainly headed far in that direction at the moment. The problem with the situation in Guatemala today, and primarily with the Chorti area, is the fact that Spanish is a language that is considered a language of opportunity. Therefore, Chorti is relegated to a language it's a language of what they call the milpa, right? The language of the field. If you're going to learn Chorti, the idea is you're going to be an agriculturalist, and you're going to go towards subsistence living. The average wage for a day laborer in the fields today is about $1 to $1.50 a day. So the motivation to move children beyond that is quite profound. And there's a direct correlation with most of my consultants that I work with in terms of if I teach them Chorti, they're simply going to become just what we were, agriculturalists. But if we teach them solely Spanish, probably they're going to have more opportunities and have a better life than us. And that is one of the primary leaders in terms of reasons why things have gone south in terms of language teaching in the family. Literacy, it is about 45% for men at the moment in Spanish. Women have only about a 5% literacy rate, and there are both government and private sponsored education programs that have been implemented, and they are having an impact. They are making a difference, no doubt. We'll have to see whether they can sustain that in terms of funding over the long term. The status of the language, it is primarily a language that's used, again, in the fields and in the homes, in certain hamlets. But even areas, again, like Hokotan and Kamotan, which have traditionally been some of the powerhouses in terms of where the Chorti were settled, and really the religious as well as sort of traditional practice basis of the culture. Today, Kamotan has probably 5 to 10 speakers at the max. And even 100 years ago, it was the spiritual capital of the Chorti. Hokotan is the same. Perhaps some 65% of the population is ethnically indigenous, where you hardly hear Chorti spoken today in the streets. Wisdom, if you look at that quote at the bottom here, Wisdom, who was an ethnographer who worked there in the 1930s, wrote, "These families usually pride themselves on their degree of Ladino culture," Ladino being a term for non-Chorti. "Their older members still speak Chorti fluently, but the young adults can barely converse in it, and most of their children know only a few words." So this is the situation even in the 1930s. It has gotten considerably worse today. It is, again, the language of the workplace and of the home. Probably the biggest issue is that as soon as you leave from your small communities where Chorti is still valued, people will very quickly switch to Spanish as soon as they get around Ladino speakers. So anyone who speaks Spanish in any of these larger towns like Hokotan and Camotan, it will change immediately. This is a Hokotan. This is a picture back in the 1960s, John Fott's work. Most of the areas up here are where all the primary speakers of the language are. And just in terms of, give you a sense of how this problem really is an issue, this is about the point, this area right here today, where people will switch. And I've done this dozens and dozens of times. You walk down here, you're speaking Chorti with them. As soon as you get here, they'll switch to Spanish. And they'll keep Spanish for the rest of the conversation while you're in town. As soon as we walk back up, they'll switch to Chorti once you start up this hill. And it's systematic, and it's something I can actually predict because they're so concerned about discrimination in the town. They said, we simply won't speak it because we'll be discriminated against if we do so once we get into Hokotan proper. This brings up this wonderfully interesting issue of this conference, which is well-being and language. I want to propose two ways in which the Chorti have their languages related to the well-being of the people. First one is something that's perhaps a bit idiosyncratic to the Chorti themselves. It's this notion of supan, which is the idea of shame or embarrassment. For the Chorti, in their understanding of the world, one of the primary causes of sickness is embarrassment or shame. So in whatever form, if you're embarrassed, you're automatically weakened, they say, in the spirit, and therefore you'll be susceptible to all the influences of evil spirits who are around and just waiting for you to feel embarrassed or feel shame and then attack, and it's literally like your immune system goes on hold temporarily, is how they describe it. And so if you fall in front of a crowd and everybody laughs at you, you're shamed, and you will, they say, guaranteed fall sick within a day or two. Again, because your spirit has been weakened by this. And they consider this one of the primary causes of illness is this shame. For example, if a couple is caught having sex out in the forest, which seems to be a common thing, they say that one of my informants says the man was infected with his takin sakup, which is a type of frothing of the mouth and throat disease. In his throat because of embarrassment when he was found with his extramarital lover in the forest. So this is a very, again, common theme, the idea that if you are embarrassed or shamed, you're thereby extra susceptible to disease. Now, if we can extend this to the shame and the embarrassment that is placed upon the Chorti because of their language, that they feel, you can already see a direct correlation in their minds between the shaming that will take place if they go to a city and are speaking their native language, and they'll thereby fall ill the next day, they'll blame it on the fact that they were embarrassed in town because they were caught speaking Chorti and somebody mocked them. And so there is this interesting direct correlation through sort of their mythology in terms of where sickness comes from that has these very detrimental effects of shaming. And again, this is not going to be across culture, but specifically in the case of the Chorti, this is one of the reasons that they associate with falling ill, is because they were shamed by actually speaking their language. So several of the other influences that are negatively affecting the Chorti, one are, of course, and it's been discussed a lot in this conference, is the effects of bilingualism. Chorti are primarily bilingual, 90%, probably more in most areas. Therefore, code switching and lexical borrowing are issues that are actually plaguing some areas to the point where because they simply have no mechanism for replacing Spanish nouns, even for those who want to do it today, it's not working. Some of the revitalization groups, for example, have come up with these large texts on how can we replace this word with this made-up word. But the neologisms simply fail because no one's actually using them on the ground. So instead, what you have is massive amounts of code switching and borrowing. And just the yellow here gives you a sense of, in an average Chorti sentence, how often they're switching to Spanish and using Spanicized forms. Even if some that have been relexicalized, they're still Spanish. Again, and these are key areas in discourse, right? You can see a lot of the adverbs, especially, are prone to be taken from directly from Spanish. But there's also a very fascinating case, which is, again, idiosyncratic perhaps to the Chorti in some ways, but there has been a systematic replacing of ritual language done by the Chorti ritual specialists. And the elders told me about this explicitly, that they have, they said their teachers would told them that in the past they would actually carefully incorporate extra Spanish-sized forms, Spanish language forms, in their speech, in their ritual speech, because language, the Spanish language was a language of prestige, right? And back when the communities were primarily monolingual. And therefore, the net effect of this is that you would have ritual terms that were in Chorti, which were no longer used. And all that you had was Spanish forms. So this was a systematic process where they incorporated a lot of these terms in, thereby causing other terms to be lost. They describe it something very similar to what Fisher talks about in terms of doctor talk, trying to talk a certain way to increase your prestige in a community. And they would do that by using a lot of Spanish forms with which people were not familiar. And that certainly, their power relations were in fact being reproduced through this effort. Let me give you a sense of it. So the word vapor here in Spanish, right, mean vapor, but they take this to mean an altogether different form. So this verb here is a single intransitive verb, agua porte ya vapio, and it means they heat with a menacing vapor on the bones. See, this is the effect of the evil spirits on the individual. They had an original term for this action, but they no longer do because they replaced it with the Spanish form, and today the only form they know is vapor. So this is one of the many, many cases where the original term has been lost because of this incorporation of Spanish-sized terms. Just give you a sense of how pervasive it is. In this curing prayer, you can see, and again in the yellow, where they're introducing Spanish forms rather than the original, again in these key parts of each of the coupleted halves here. And again, sometimes these are very systematic. All the key nouns or all the key nominal phrases will be in Spanish. They'll come up with all these different terms for incense rather than just call it utsu, which is the word for incense. And they'll avoid it and try to use all these other terms. So what this has resulted in is a loss of numerous ritual terms, which are unrecoverable today. I've worked with all the remaining traditional healers that I can find and extensively, and most of these terms are gone as far as I can find. I hope that's not the case, but the idea that this lexicalization of Spanish terms into Chorti has caused enormous language loss. For the Chorti, they find a very intimate connection, though, between language loss, well-being, we should say among these, and ritual practice. And I wanted to look at the causality here. First off, there has been a very coordinated effort to delegitimize community ritual practice. There's no doubt about this. There's fear amongst the community to even perform rituals on a community level. And the reason is very simple, brujería, right? The idea of witchcraft. They'll be accused of it, and they're very intolerant of the fact that anyone would try to enact ritual because of the both Catholic and evangelical efforts that have made great inroads into these Chorti communities. Ritual specialists have been systematically killed, and this is not exaggeration, they literally have been. And even in my field work since the 90s, I've seen more than a dozen ritual specialists that have been killed simply because they are practicing ritual or they're suspected of practicing ritual. Brett Metz, one of the world's foremost Chorti anthropologists, wrote recently, he said, witchcraft accusations have become so rampant that rituals are practiced only privately. The most important specialists, the rain-calling padrinos, were killed long ago or forced to go underground, while diviners, healers, and midwives continue to be murdered as well. So into that situation, you have a very precarious one to proclaim that you're going to continue ritual practice. Here are the causal links that I want to talk about today. A loss of ritual specialists obviously would link thereby to a loss of ritual, which thereby results in a loss of ritual language. And for the chortee, they, at least many chortee, the elderly chortee, they see this as a direct link to their well-being. And the fact that ritual language has been lost and ritual has been lost has contributed to the fact that they are suffering today. Let me give you a few quotes to this. One of my elderly consultants from Amatillo, Don Gregorio, said, "Poner mishtukai padrino, mishtukai rogante, por eso huarca, che sufrir." Simply, there are no more padrinos. That's their word for rainmaking specialist. There are no more petitioners. That's why we are suffering. Wisdom even noted back in the 1930s that the most important of these religious specialists, these padrinos, are the only ones who know how to recite the prayers and perform the ceremonies. Therefore, if we take away those who actually know how to do the ritual, then the consequences of not doing the ritual are going to be apparent, and that's how they see it. One of my consultants described the killing of Chico Garcia, who was the most famed of all the padrinos in the early 1950s. And they said, "Today we are seeing that nobody will pray for rain simply because no one believes anymore. We have lost our beliefs that we used to have when Chico Garcia was alive, who prayed for rain. This man prayed for rain and he was able to pray." In other words, he knew the correct ritual language that would bring about the well-being in the community. Their reminisces thus in this way: "There was no hunger in the past. Everything that was planted in the cornfield, everything sprouted." So this is sort of that reminiscing of the good old days, as it were. Skip over that. Another one of my consultants mentioned that this idea of performing ritual prayers is what he says my ancestors used to do, and they had corn, beans, everything, unlike today. So they're seeing a direct link between not practicing, not knowing the prayers, and community well-being. One of the ways of doing this is in the field ceremony, which they perform, which is being so commonly today associated with brujeria and this idea of sorcery. One of my elderly consultants, again, said, "I can still see it now. There was sufficient everything." These were back in the days that they performed this ritual in the cornfield. There were chickens, there were turkeys, there was an abundance of everything. Today we are seeing that there is no longer anything. The harvest is gone and so forth. And if you go to the bottom, the harvest is gone because we truly lived wonderfully back then. It was a wonderful time, not like we see today. My dad talks like this, of course, the good old days. But this is such a common theme with the elderly, that it was so much better in the past because we performed rituals and there was people who knew how to perform the rituals. As I finish here, I just want to look at an interesting set of poetry that was written by Chortee in the late 1990s, published by the Academy of Mayan Languages. I want to just analyze a couple of the poems that were written, again, related to language and the importance of language use. Let's just read the English here. "My language is living and is what speaks to me. I would give my heart to protect it. Let speak he who wants to speak what serves no purpose, but my language I will never forget. I have lost my white clothing, I have lost my sandals, but my language I will not let be lost. Let speak he who wants to speak what serves no purpose, but my language I will never forget." It's interesting, this idea of this white, he talks about his white clothes and his sandals. In Yucatec Maya, that is a diphrastic kenning for religion. And again, the idea that it's closely associated with your sandals and your clothing, representing really who you are culturally. And finally, I just want to look at one more, this Utequado Jorone Chortí, the strength of the Chortí language. I want you to see the agricultural imagery that is being used in describing his language. "Our language and our knowledge were sleeping like a plant that was cut at the neck." This is what they use, a small curved blade to cut the vines of squash and other things. "By the Ladinos. And now it is returning to life. It is rising up like a pine tree, going quickly upward. You wonderful teachers, gather yourselves to work on behalf of our Chortee language. This is the language of Kuhilio Tweets Pashil for work." The idea here of an agricultural metaphor is profound in ancient Maya culture. I mean, here on Palenque Sycophagus, you can see ancestors being growing out of the ground and sprouting and so forth. And the Aztecs talk about themselves as being plants that are growing and sprouting and dying and yellowing and so forth. The agricultural ties are clear, but this is interesting because it links it to the language itself. So I just want to look at one more here. The rays of the sun and the rainbow with its colors make it appear, and it brings to life the Chorti language, that it was sleeping like a squash vine with fruit, its roots cut by the Ladinos long ago. Now it is rising again like a cloud in order to go sprinkling showers all over the surface of the Chorti land. And now that here's the call, let us plant squash, which is a direct link back to the language. Let's plant our language once again. Let's sprout, let's grow, let's bear fruit. So my final thoughts on this are, for some among the Chorti today, the idea of language loss is a good thing, to be quite honest. They see this as a positive thing because they believe there's kids will have more opportunity if they speak Spanish. But for others, there's a direct causal link between the loss of their language and their current state of economic woe. And the some believe that the abandonment of ritual practice and its accompanying ritual language are part of that equation. And therefore, drought, malnutrition, and sickness have been the result. And finally, just to kind of put a little happy note on this otherwise depressing ending, the idea here is that there are some among Chorti, and I've been working with them for about 15 years now, who are trying to revitalize a traditional practice. And it's a fascinating process, and their idea is that if they can revitalize ritual language, bring back those who know how to say the prayers, that it will bring prosperity again to the Chorti. Okay, thank you.
Yes, there's time for questions.
I don't quite understand the social and political context of people being killed. Who holds their gun or the machete, and why?
Yeah, this is how they describe it. The verb is machetear, right? To chop them up with a machete.
Yes.
And this is the standard way of killing people who are suspected of brujería in any sense. If you're suspected of being involved in that, there's a good chance you're going to end up killed.
It's members of the same ethnic community. So
it is.
It's completely lateral.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And the divisions are, and these are surprising at times, but it is very often, they won't admit to it, but everybody knows it and everybody talks about it. It's most often evangelical Christians, right, who are involved in it, who find it as justifiable killing, essentially, because they're getting rid of sorcery and so forth. Everybody knows it, everybody talks about it, but they deny it. Yeah. So yeah, it's fellow Chorti. It's not an outside group. It's within the community, to be sure. Yeah.
If the ritual are being revitalized now,
mm-hmm.
is there still a danger for any practitioners to be involved in it?
Yeah, there most certainly are, and so many of them won't actually participate. The photo that I put up here, actually, that I'll just set up here again while I'm talking, this was one ceremony that I went to years ago, and the community came forward. They were fascinated by it. People were crying, some of the old ladies saying, I haven't seen ritual done since I was a child, and so forth. And that was all great until the nuns arrived from the Belgian nuns, and as soon as they pulled up, everybody scattered like flies, right? Because they were so worried about being branded as traditional practices, and people just scattered off the top of this mountain. 80% were gone in 5 minutes. Again, so as long as it was sort of secret, they were fine with it. But as soon as somebody who was an authority who could tell and talk about it came, people just scattered. So there is a danger, and it's one of the biggest stumbling blocks to this process, is that it's a localized group. People are still desperately afraid to be a part of it. There are just some who are stepping forward and saying, and they're all part of language revitalization groups who are spearheading this. And they're sort of taking a risk. And there are definitely risks still involved, yeah. Yeah.
Is it possible to make an agreement with all the people who are in that position, like the Belgian nuns, that there's no contradiction between what you are doing and do this? In most countries, it would possible to talk to the Catholic Church and just say, not only sort of passively don't do this, but actively tell your people that our church is not about
think to a large extent it's been tried all throughout Central America since the beginning, but syncretism is, it being what it is, it applies differently in different situations. With the Chorti, they've been very stubborn in that regard up until this point, and it has not gone all that well. Through the 50s and 60s and 70s, last century, I think there was quite a bit of syncretism, but today it's tried, there's a concerted effort to divest traditional Catholic practice with some of the elements of Chorti that were allowed in earlier. So if anything, the pendulum is swinging in the other direction. I don't know if I see any great hope of that happening. It sounds like a logical approach, but I see the exact opposite happening. They're becoming more conservative than even 100 years ago, but easily. Yeah.
Is there Catholic action there?
There is.
And they're sort of along with evangelical Christians against all of this?
They most certainly are.
So what sort of Catholic priests are there? Are there both Catholic action ones and traditionalists?
There are both, yep.
Okay, so you got the real problems.
Coming from all directions. So again, some are more violent than others. Others don't, obviously we say they don't condone it. But unfortunately, it's the individuals who act in the name of a religion and so forth. But almost all the killings are motivated by a religious perspective, yeah.
So I actually want to go back to what you said in the beginning about shame. Mm-hmm. And I have two questions about that. So is this similar to, it sounds very similar to espanto, which I hear about in Mexico, and I always kind of assumed was also present in Guatemala, but is there also espanto as well as the shame, or is it the same thing?
There is called susto.
Yeah,
susto.
That's what they call it.
Yeah,
they call it in susto.
Yes.
But it is not the same thing. Both simultaneously exist. Yeah.
Okay.
So the susto is different. The espanto is different. This is something unique to the Chorti that simply says if we're ashamed, it opens us up to illness. And so it is different, yeah.
And so the example that you gave of the married man in the woods with his lover, and that bringing shame to him. Mm-hmm. What about his wife? Would she also become ill because of
Interesting.
This?
Yeah, it's a good question. If anyone who feels shame for whatever reason, even if it's not your actions, is liable to fall sick. They talk about the ability of these whole child and these spirits, these evil spirits, to infect, but they will infect primarily the person who does it, but who actually feels the most shame. But yeah, it can be secondary. Be the wife who would also feel sick and sad because of what her husband had done and thereby become more susceptible. Yeah.
Did you find the witchcraft related killings, was that a barrier to your research? Were people maybe afraid to talk to you about
oh, heavens, yes.
things? And did you have people maybe they were talking with you and then they stopped? Or what's your experience that way?
You just described it perfectly.
Okay.
I mean, the biggest challenge in my work was to find people who would talk. I would go to like covert action and so forth. You arrive 20 minutes before I do at this person's house. I'll casually walk by. I'll slip in the back. It was incredible. And one very famous healer who had been trying for a year to get to talk to me, finally he agreed. And we did all that covert action. Sat down for 20 minutes, pulled out the recorder, got unbelievable material, just fantastic. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the interview, he just jumps up, looked around, said, what if somebody finds out, and just ran out the back door.
Wow.
And the interview was over. But literally some of the best material that I had in terms of prayer and so forth, of what he said was just astounding. And I got 20 minutes of it. So yeah, that was by far one of the most challenging issues, is getting people to talk about it.
And you said over 15 years or something, you've been working in the same community, and so has that over time gotten better or worse, or have you gone to different communities among the people?
I've worked in almost all the communities where they speak Chorti, and they all know me enough to where they both know that I'm there for that reason sometimes, which people don't like, but I try to do a lot of other things so that they feel like I'm doing other positive things, not just ritual language. But it's been a barrier in every community I've worked with, yeah.
So you're able to emphasize other parts of your research?
Definitely, yeah, community things that actually benefit the community individually and so forth. So that's something I sort of do more clandestinely at this point because the reaction was so negative to it, and a little frightening, actually. Yeah.
Okay, maybe one last question.
Yeah.
Was there somebody else who hadn't had a chance? Okay. Did you know that it was the case that there was this kind of persecution going on in the, with the Chorti when you decided to focus?
No idea. No idea at all. Yeah. And I knew I wanted to study ritual language and so forth, but I had no idea that was the case. But it became apparent within the very first few weeks of my year. So it's been challenging ever since. The better the relationships get with the individuals, and the more they trust you, the more that they'll allow themselves to open up. But boy, it's been a challenge.
Well, it seems like you must have to mask your ulterior motive in even going into the communities to protect these people.
You do, because you don't want to put them in danger talking to me and so forth. And many of them simply said, I won't take a chance. Sorry, I'd love to talk to you, but I won't. So yeah, I would take people to Chiquimula, an hour away. We'd set up a day in the hotel down there, just the two of us, to do recording and so forth, and nobody would be any the wiser. That's sort of what it's come to. Doing it in the communities is really challenging. Most of my fieldwork is not ritual language, and I can do that, and everyone's great with it. But when it got to the point, that's what I would do in most cases. I would actually take them out of the communities or meet them somewhere and pay for it, so it'd be worth their while.
So I think we have to stop here.
Okay.
Let's thank Carrie again.
Good, thank you.
You.